Today's guest, Leave It to Beaver star Jerry Mathers. You're listening to the Eagles Talent Podcast. Eagles Talent Speakers Bureau partners with meeting and event planners to provide the most relevant speakers and entertainers in the world. You can find us online at eaglestalent.com. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Eagles Talent Podcast. I'm your host, Sheldon Senek. In the 1950s, there was not a more popular childhood actor than Jerry Mathers, known most of us as the Beaver. I recently had an opportunity to talk with Jerry about his life before, during, and after the Beaver, and his quest to spread awareness about diabetes. Jerry Mathers, welcome to the Eagles Talent Podcast. I really appreciate you being with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Sheldon. Thank you for inviting me.
Jerry, you know, it's hard not to think about the 1950s when you're hearing your name. The 50s seem so contrasting to today's world. For example, television is practically a Walmart of choices. You can select any channel with any type of programming. In addition, we have the web with YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook, among other sites. And this really makes me curious about the American family. What do you think has changed between the 1950s and now? And what do you think has remained the same?
Well, when Leave It to Beaver was on, there were basically three networks. And in a lot of the outlying areas, very outlying, not in your big cities, those were the only stations that were received. And of course, you know, Los Angeles, Chicago, and a lot of other, the big cities, New York, they had affiliate stations, but for the most part, they were only the networks. And so you had a very limited choice. Now you have a much greater choice, but the production qualities of what is being shown is quite different. And a lot of it is sensationalism in that they need to grab you right away and pull you in to watch whatever their show is. So a lot of it is a lot more sensational. And I will reference my remarks specifically to Leave It to Beaver. Mm-hmm. I mean, Leave It to Beaver is a story about a boy growing up somewhere in the United States. Mayfield was the town. They never said where it was because they didn't want anybody to be able to say, oh, well, it's an Eastern thing or a Western thing.
Right.
In fact, they had a show where I was running away and I went to the bus stop. Uh-huh. And they looked and they saw that they had put Chicago so much money, Los Angeles and New York on a little sign that one of the painters had made up to make it look like a bus station.
Right.
And they had them remove the amount of money so that people would know it was the United States, but they didn't want it to know where it was. And with all the programming on today, you know, it's very, very hard. When Leave It to Beaver was on, television really only came into vogue in the late 1940s and early 1950s. Mm-hmm. And because of that, when it first came into vogue, there might be in 1949, 1950, and 51, only one television on a whole block. And before that, people would actually line up in front of electronic stores just to see a television. And nowadays, I mean, a lot of people have a TV in the kitchen, in all of the bedrooms. The kids are watching one thing. The adults are watching another.
Right.
Leave It to Beaver was meant as family entertainment. It's good, clean family entertainment that some things the kids relate to and some things the parents relate to. And I know today that a lot of the shows that we're on, I have my children are all in there. They're 20s and early 30s right now, but a lot of the shows that were on when they were a lot smaller aren't geared to them. They're geared for adults, and yet the kids, because a lot of times now they have a television in their bedroom or wherever, can really watch a lot of things, and the parents don't really have the supervision they used to have over one TV.
I read that your acting began as early as 2, I believe, for Pet Milk.
Yes.
Okay. You know, and it seems to me that today's parents take a child to an audition and think money in the bank, and I don't know if that's sensationalized by the media. I was just kind of curious, what was the thought when you were younger and your parents taking you to an audition?
Well, I have to tell you how I actually started. My father was a World War II veteran, and under the GI Bill, he was from Iowa. That's very important.
Uh-huh.
My mom was from Minnesota. But under the GI Bill, he was a bomber pilot and flew 25 missions over Germany. GI Bill, he'd graduated from college in Iowa before I was born,
uh-huh.
and he went started to, at USC. He graduated from there, but he wanted to go back to get a higher degree to USC. So he went back to Iowa. I spent about 3 or 4 months, and I'm a little vague because I'm not really sure, and born in Iowa, but my parents then moved to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad graduated from SC, and he got his first teaching job as a coach and teacher. He actually retired as the superintendent of LA City Schools, but at that time he was just a teacher. And as you know, especially in those days, teachers didn't make a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
And my mom was kind of always looking for deals, and she happened to be at a sale at a big department store out here in California, and she had me with her, and she was looking for clothes for me. And a woman walked up to her and said, "Is this your little boy?" And my mother said, "Yes." And then she said, "Well, you know, he looks just like the family we've been using for our catalogs.
Uh-huh.
And we wonder if he could be a model for us." And my mom was very naive and had no idea. And she said, "Well, I don't know. What would he have to do?" And the woman said, "Well, he would have to pose for pictures and then do runway work where you'd hold the model's hand and you'd walk up and down and show off their clothes at a fashion show." And my mom said, "Well, gee, I just really don't know." Because she thought it was some sort of a gimmick, obviously.
Right, right.
And the lady said, "But, or maybe, and, we would pay him, and he could keep the clothes." And my mom said, "Well, he could probably do that." So that's how I actually started. So my mother didn't start dragging me to a lot of interviews. In fact, she never did. And what happened was TV, as I said, had just started. This was about 1951 and early 1952. And there were no child actors for television in Hollywood. And you'll say, how can that be? There's all the actors were in Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
Well, this was live TV. There wasn't any film. And so the only people that they'd been using were New York child stage actors who were used to working in front of a live audience with a lot of different things going on.
Right.
So when they went to find movie actors that were going to do this, they said, "Well, gee, they've never worked in front of a live audience because that's in film, and that's what was in Los Angeles, all major motion picture people." And they said, "Well, the models have walked out. Maybe they could do it." So at 2 years old, I was on the Ed Wynn Show on a commercial for Pet Milk. I walked into a barroom scene with all these cowboys fighting. I had on cowboy boots, diapers, six guns, and a cowboy hat. As I would walk through all these fighting cowboys, I was picked up and put on the bar, and I pounded on the bar and said, "I'm the toughest hombre in these parts. You better have my brand." And Ed Wynn then went into a commercial for Pet Milk, which at that time was used for baby formula.
Uh-huh.
Well, once you did one of these jobs right, everybody wanted you. So then I started working all the time, and I became known as somebody that could say lines and work in front of a live audience. From there, Alfred Hitchcock saw me doing something and hired me in The Trouble with Harry, which is Shirley MacLaine's first movie. I did two movies with Bob Hope.
Uh-huh.
I worked with all of the major actors, Walter Pidgeon, Frank Sinatra.
Wow.
You know, everybody doing movies and TV in the early 50s. And it wasn't until 1957 that I started Leave It to Beaver.
I'm curious, what was your parents' view of television as you evolved into doing the Leave It to Beaver shows?
My parents' view, I think it was like most people. It was just something that entertained them.
Uh-huh.
And they were quite happy that, you know, I was able to go and work and bring in a little money. They did keep it for me separate. In fact, when I finished Leave It to Beaver, had a trust fund, and that's what I put myself through college with.
Wow.
I'm a graduate of the University of California at Berkeley, and got that money to go there and pay for my own college because of the money that my parents saved for me.
Mm-hmm. You know, growing up in the 1970s, I probably watched every episode of Leave It to Beaver myself, and it's interesting to me how that really became my point of view, the 50s family. How different was the Cleaver family from the real 1950s family?
Well, say that you watched it. Just so you know, Leave It to Beaver is the longest-running television show in history. It's never been off the air in it was about 52 years now.
Wow.
It's shown all over the world. So it's a show that everyone in a lot of different languages, in fact, places like Japan, where they don't have beavers because they're not indigenous, I'm known as the Happy Boy. So but the writers were very aware that they were presenting a new genre of life, because before Leave It to Beaver, in foreign markets, everyone thought that we were all gangsters or cowboys, because they really didn't have a whole view of the United States.
Right.
So Leave It to Beaver was the first real show that went out and showed what, and it's obviously fiction. It's not true. I'm not trying to say that. But they got a little different view of the United States by watching Leave It to Beaver. But it was situation comedy. It's not like a reality show. It's not, people breaking down and screaming at each other. It was all
Right.
scripted. But it took a week to do. It wasn't something that they just kind of threw together. We had 2 days of rehearsal where every line was looked at and made sure that it was just right, it felt right, and then 3 days of shooting. So they went to a lot of trouble to make a great situation comedy, and that's what it is. But it isn't actually a per se accurate view of what every person was doing in America at that time. And I think one of the things I always get is people say, "Well, how come like Barbara Billingsley was always so dressed up?" Barbara Billingsley was a very, very skinny New York model. And when they went to light her, they found that her neck had a shadow on it. And the shadow made it look like maybe a scar, like maybe a tracheotomy or anything like that. Now, usually they would take lights and with a brunette and put more light and make that shadow disappear.
Right.
With her blonde hair, it would flare or something. They couldn't do that. So that's why Barbara Billingsley always wears pearls.
Pearls, right.
And of course, wearing pearls to vacuum, you have to have an apron and high heels.
For a young boy at the time, did you find it to be a lot of pressure, especially with between the show and schoolwork?
No, I had a private tutor, and as I say, my dad had moved along in the system of the LA Unified School District, so I had some of the best teachers for my grade level. It wasn't so as important for me, but Tony Dow, who played my older brother Wally, always wanted to be an artist. In fact, within the last year, he opened a sculpting piece in the Louvre. But he would always have teachers that actually had a doctorate in art or along those lines. My teachers were some of the best because it paid quite a bit more because they were there for 8 hours a day than a regular teacher's job and was quite prestigious. So my dad could go and pick the very best, third, fourth, fifth, whatever grade it was, teacher, ask them if they'd want to come to the studio and teach, me. And so I had, probably an education that no one else could afford in this country. It's like Europe, in the 18 and 1900s, where I had a private tutor just one-on-one teaching me exactly what I needed to know for that level.
Right. I've certainly noticed in many TV appearances with you and the rest of the Leave It to Beaver cast, you really have developed a special bond. Can you talk about that and what the show meant to you?
You know what? We're all very good friends. People always say, and because they see me relating to Hugh Beaumont and Barbara Billingsley as a parent, they say, "Well, were those parent figures?" No, they were like really good friends.
Right.
They were like maybe a teacher that you really got to know well. They were all everybody on the show was absolutely wonderful, and we got along, and there was really no big fights or anybody was jealous of one person having a bigger part or something like that. So it was a very homogeneous group, and we all really liked each other. And I think that still comes true now. Hugh Beaumont was actually a Methodist minister
Oh, really?
before he became an actor, and as I say, Barbara was a New York model. You know, Tony was basically a training Olympic athlete when he got the job. That's why they hired him, because they wanted somebody. He was a tumbler and a swimmer,
right.
And they wanted somebody who was, you know, the very big brother who was very athletic. So he had actually never been an actor before. He did one pilot of a thing called Johnny something or other that was a kind of a takeoff on Tarzan.
Uh-huh.
And he was the boy, because he was such a great athlete. So he hadn't worked, but he was training as an Olympic athlete when he actually got the job for Leave It to Beaver.
Does it surprise you how iconic the Beaver became? And was there a moment that you realized how big this character, the Beaver, and you became?
No, I don't think so. It's something that I've known all my life. It, you know, had it happened as an adult actor, and I've been struggling for years,
sure.
It was in some ways much too easy for me, because it just came to me. It was something that I loved doing. So it's something that's always been fun. I've been all over the world. I've met great people. It's been such a benefit to me that I just, you know, I don't see any downside. I've made wonderful friends all over the world, and people still recognize not me so much, but the show itself. It's an iconic show. And so it's very nice to be associated with something that has and does still bring such good feelings to everyone.
So what is one question you are asked the most by people?
Oh, you know, there's so many. I think probably how did I get the name Beaver? And no one really knows that answer. They went all 6 years of the show and never answered it. And in the last show, which is called The Family Scrapbook,
uh-huh.
They said Wally couldn't pronounce Theodore, which is my actual name on the show, the character's name,
uh-huh.
And he called it Tweeter. And so from that, they got Beaver. So, but that's, people always ask, really is no answer. We asked the writers, they just said that they were looking for a name, and Joe Conley, who was one of the writers of the show,
uh-huh.
Had always wanted to be a writer, and he had a little black book where he wrote, in fact, most of the instances from Leave It to Beaver are from real life. So he wrote about things happening to him growing up in the 20s and 30s. Mr. Mosier, the other writer, didn't have quite the same book, but he had a similar one.
Uh-huh.
But at the back of this book, Mr. Conley had every person he ever met's name. So if your name uh-huh. was Tom, Dick, or Harry, obviously you put that in first. During
uh-huh.
World War II, he was a merchant marine, and one of his shipmates was named the Beaver,
uh-huh.
or Beaver. And he, when he went to do the show, went to the back of the book, and started going through all his names. He went through the A's, didn't find uh-huh. anything, found Beaver and said that's the name of the character. So that's how the name really came about. But people always want to know, you know, what's the deep story in it? It's just the story that he was a merchant marine with.
In 1996, and I hope I have this correct, I believe you were diagnosed with diabetes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Did you notice problems, or did this diagnosis take you by surprise?
The diagnosis took me by surprise, mm-hmm. and I'll tell you how it happened. I have a very good friend who's a doctor, and I had finished, after Leave It to Beaver, I went to regular school, went to the military, went on to Berkeley, and I took the money from Leave It to Beaver and was investing it, and a banker that I was investing it said, when I graduated from college, said, what do you want to do with your life now? And I said, well, I'm going to probably go to law school. And he said, well, you've done very well investing your money. I will tell you that if you want, I will give you a job as soon as you get your diploma. So I started in banking. I was an operations and loan officer. I then went into real estate.
Uh-huh.
So I was totally out of the acting business. And I went back in, and Tony and I did a part. But Leave It to Beaver was done.
Uh-huh.
And then we did the new Leave It to Beaver for 10 years.
Sure.
And then I said to myself, I've worked all my life. I'm going to retire. And I thought, well, I'll go lead the good life. And the good life to me was going out to a lot of restaurants. I actually owned and bought at that time a catering company. And we did studio catering for all the different studios.
Uh-huh.
And I started to put on a lot of weight. But I look around me, and a lot of the people were overweight. And I thought, this is the good life. And I have a very good friend that's a doctor, and she kept telling me, and she's my personal physician, but uh-huh. she's a good friend. And she said, you know, you better come in for a physical because I'd put on about 60 pounds. And when I went in there, I took the test, and she said, come back in 3 days and we'll talk about it. And she said, how would you like to see your kids graduate at that time from high school? I said, of course.
Right.
And she said, and get married? And I said, yes, and hold grandbabies if they have them? I said, of course. She said, if you don't do something about your diabetes, which was a new word to me, mm-hmm. you'll be dead in 2 to 5 years. Because I had very, very high blood sugar and, as I say, absolutely no symptoms. Now, I was tired a lot, and I didn't do a lot of activity, but I just thought this is the good life. So that's actually how I found out. That was about 10 years ago. I have been on insulin. I have been on oral medication. But for the last few years, I have controlled it with diet and exercise. As I say, I've lost the weight. I'm now at a weight that's a lot better for my body. It is a degenerative disease, so probably as time moves on, I may move back into oral medication. But right now, I'm controlling it with diet and exercise. The terrible thing about diabetes is there are a lot of people like me, and the numbers keep going up over the 10 years I've been talking about it. I believe now there's about 24 million, something like that, people with diabetes, maybe a little more. A third of them know they have it and actively treat it. The next third know they have it but say, I don't have any terrible symptoms, so I'm not going to treat it. And then, of course, there's a third that actively treat it and are doing well. And one of the things I like to reach is that third that know they have it and don't do anything about it, because by the time they come around, I was very lucky this late that my doctor knew that that weight was going to do this to me. A lot of people don't have that advantage, so I feel that I can use my celebrity to publicize this fact so that people will at least find out if they're at risk. It's very easy. You go to the American Diabetes Association. They have a little pen and paper test. It's a few questions. You answer yes or no. If you have a certain score, then you move on to the next step, which is to see whether or not your blood sugars are too high. But you can take this simple test, and it'll tell you whether or not you're at extreme risk for diabetes or at just a general risk.
And is this something that can be passed down through, you know, in the family, genetics? Or
you know, it is, but it isn't. There are two types of diabetes. There is type 1, and that is when mostly children get that before age 12. And then there's type 2. Type 2 is usually associated with different things, but one of the most prevalent factors is being overweight.
Happiness is being left alone. Happiness is
When I was doing some research, I saw in the early the 1960s, you had a band that you formed called Beaver and the Trappers. My understanding is that you recorded for a few years, played sock hops and other events. How different maybe were you as a musician compared to the Beaver? Or more importantly, how did people respond to you doing that?
Well, this was during my junior and senior year in high school, and it was during the 60s, a la the Beatles. So it was pretty much a garage band. We used to play sock hops and things like that. We did record for Atlantic Records, and we had two other recording contracts that we did. So there are three records out there, and I know sometimes at personal appearances, people will even have some of the records, and I always re-sign, personalize them and sign them to them. So, you know, it wasn't that different. I mean, people, honestly, Leave It to Beaver was running when I was in high school.
Right.
So people knew me as an actor, but I got very lucky because one of the reasons I wanted to go to a regular high school is I wanted to do sports. And so I started out on the Frosh football team, but we went to a spring training camp, and the Frosh trained with the JV and the varsity. So the day I started school with all the other freshmen, I knew all of the football players, all of the jocks, basically, in the school. And so, you know, it wasn't a big step for me. As I progressed in school, I got along very well and was treated just like everyone else. So when I started a band with people from the school, it was just kind of normal.
Recently, you also performed on Broadway in the musical Hairspray. What was that experience like?
Well, you know, as an actor, that's probably the pinnacle. It's a very, very small fraternity of actors that can actually say they worked on Broadway. A lot of people have worked in television. A lot of them worked on movies. Very few have done major motion pictures. I'm also a licensed radio. I have a federal FCC license to do radio. But I never thought, movies, of course, but I never thought I would do Broadway. And it's kind of a funny thing. My agent called me up and he said, how would you like to go to New York? I said, okay. And he said, well, there is one catch. And I said, well, what's that? He said, well, you'd have to read for a part. And I said, oh, but he said, but then you could always tell people you auditioned for a Broadway play. And I said, well, that'll be fine. And he said, oh, and by the way, work up a song. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you'll have to sing. I went, huh? And a few months later, I opened on Broadway. So it was definitely a great experience. It was a wonderful, pretty much notch in my belt, I guess is what you could call it. It was, you know, something that I always wanted to do but never thought that I would.
Now,
I had done a lot of plays. I just had never been to Broadway.
Well, I read somewhere recently, I'm not sure if I have this right, but are you doing a production of Cinderella?
I'm doing the production of Cinderella right now.
Uh-huh.
It'll open in early December. And so I work all the time as an actor,
right.
And I do go out and speak about diabetes and, you know, growing up. And I always say it's kind of like fishing. I tell people a lot about Leave It to Beaver, and then I get my point in because, as I say, there's at least probably two-thirds of the people that are either at risk or should know about diabetes in those audiences. And so I feel that it's a great way to kind of tell people something that by giving them all about Leave It to Beaver and Broadway and all the different things I've done in my life to be able to help the people that are there because they're my fans and I really like them and maybe this is my way of giving back.
Mm. Well, Jerry, it's just a wonderful thing what you're doing and especially on the platform to speak about diabetes and just a great thing. So, Jerry, I really appreciate you joining us today on this podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for inviting me.
If you would like more information on bringing Jerry Mathers into your next event, simply visit us online at eaglestalent.com. Eagles Talent Speakers Bureau, or people who inspire, educate, and entertain.
Living out on your own.
Thank you so much again for joining us today. I've been your host, Sheldon Senek, and you've been listening to the Eagles Talent Podcast.
You guessed it.